Welcome to the podcast, everyone. It's June, it's Pride Month. We're all very happy it's here, finally. I'm Cameron Martin. My pronouns are he, him, his. My nationality is Scottish-British. I'm on the MBA 2023 programme, and I'm going to be the co-president of Out in Business this year.
Hi, I'm Austin Gilliland. My pronouns are he, him, his. I'm Canadian-American and an MBA 2023, and I'm the Senior VP of Corporate Engagement for Out in Business.
Hi, I'm Julia Hamilton. My pronouns are she, her, hers. Technically, I am American and Hungarian, but much more strongly identify with being a New Yorker. I'm an MBA 2023 and very excited to be co-president of Out in Business Club this year, along with Kim.
Hi, my name is Samson Philippos. My pronouns are he, they. I am Indian by nationality. I am part of the MFA 2022 program. And for the past year, I was the VP of marketing at OIB.
So, Julia, how do you approach Pride Month? What sort of things do you do to celebrate?
Besides attending the fabulous Pride Weekend of New York City, which I must say, even though we are in London, I do think it's one of the best prides in the world. I think there's two ways that I celebrate Pride. I think on a personal level, being with my other queer friends. I think specifically for me, having other queer women to go out with is really important, and having those spaces be, you know, designated throughout Pride is something that I look forward to each year. And I think on sort of a professional and student level, the way that I think about Pride is in two parts. One, who are the legends, you know, the heroes who came before us, who I think I want to, you know, pay homage to. I think about people like Marsha P. Johnson. I think about people like Sylvia Rivera, trans woman of color who in the U.S., you know, kicked off and started what's considered to be the Stonewall Riot. And I think about them and continuing their vision and doing podcasts like this, and particularly sharing my story as a gay woman. I think those pieces and getting that story out there is really important, because I know stories like those two women helped me get to where I am. And when I think about paying homage to the past and where I want our community to go for the future, I think this being present in the moment and being open and vulnerable, you know, with my story as much as possible is kind of the way that I approach Pride, outside of course, all the fun celebrations, the rainbows everywhere, and all of the glitter. The glitter is an absolute must.
Sustainable glitter only.
Sustainable
please.
Glitter, of course. Nothing else.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. And it's amazing that you're reflecting on, you know, what's happened before and enabled us to sort of celebrate in this modern day, right? Like, the people who have had those sacrifices, the people who have gone through all the troubles to allow us to have the celebration that we have today, and then also to recognize and remember why it's still important today as well, right? How about you, Austin? What does Pride mean to you?
I think echoing a lot of what Julia said, one of the things that I always am impressed by is the amount of visibility that our community gets during this month. And it's one of those times where even the little acts, the rainbows that you start seeing come out in front of businesses, while that doesn't seem to have as much of an impact in somewhere like New York, where you're a lot more visible and you're a lot more able to be open, for a lot of international people, I hear that that actually has a really big impact, seeing huge globally recognized brands show visible support in somewhere where they may not receive that support every day. And even just in even accepting places like New York, I have a lot of friends who will suddenly start asking me about some of our queer history, which might not be a topic of conversation we otherwise have. And I think that ability to share some of those experiences and having a designated moment of thinking about that is one of the ways that Pride Month helps refocus us on the community and the progress that we're making in the areas that we still need to work, in addition to all the fun and the fact that I get to wear a lot more obnoxiously garish rainbow stuff for the month.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. And Samson, you've come from a country where, you know, Pride Month maybe isn't as celebrated as it is in the US or in the UK. You've maybe not had the chance to celebrate in the way that Julia, Austin, and I have been able to over the past few years. What does this Pride Month mean to you, and how have you been able to experience it in the past?
Yeah, completely echoing what Austin said. It is harder in some countries, and like from my background, yes, it has been harder. I still did find my own ways to celebrate Pride. What I used to do is do this thing called unpassing off. So every Pride Month, I used to do this one thing that, you know, I didn't do because I was afraid that, you know, people might just start questioning things, even though it's not the way every queer person expresses themselves. I used to do things like paint my nails, talk about queer icons all the time, talk about men in a way that, you know, a straight person wouldn't talk about them or stuff like that. It was just my month of just being, you know, happy about it. And like, yeah, I did enjoy seeing the icons as well, and like all the logos of the companies and everything. That was very encouraging. In general, I'm looking forward to this month as well, because it's going to be exciting and can't wait to celebrate with my friends.
Amazing. No, I'm really looking forward to it as well. For me, my first Pride Month that I ever celebrated was in 2019 here in London. I was working with JP Morgan at the time, and I was able to march in the parade. For me, it was the first Pride Month I actually really celebrated. I'd never really lived in a city where there had been a big Pride march or where there'd been a big sort of like festival or a lot of fun. I remember feeling so happy that my company not only like supported me in the workplace, but also like encouraged me to go out and like show who I was, you know, in front of London. And like, I was a representative of the company that day. And being able to network with all those other LGBTQ plus employees was an incredible experience. And I remember the energy of the day was just unbelievable. Seeing hundreds of thousands of people on the streets, all of the glitter, all the rainbows, all of the smiles. You know, I've never had a day like that. And since I've lived here, actually, I remember going to Soho Square afterwards and sitting in the park and drinking with all these people, and there was like drag queens everywhere, and you know, it was just unbelievable.
I think back to my first New York Pride. I had grown up in Tucson, Arizona, which has one gay bar. I had never had a lot of experience with a larger community. You sort of knew everybody who was going to be there. And the first time I was ever at the parade, and I saw the hundreds of thousands of people lined up, and just realizing that I was now part of this massive community of not just within my city, but globally. And we all have something in common, which is the shared experience of being queer. I'm personally bisexual. And that opportunity to just suddenly meet all of these new people and recognize how many future experiences there were was just eye-opening to me. So as I look forward to this Pride Month here in London, I'm really excited to see an entirely new sea of faces, but equally large as we suddenly end up in another global city with the amount of activities happening.
Amazing. Samson?
Yeah, one striking experience would have been last Pride, which was the ultimate unpassing of act of coming out to my friends for the first time. It was exciting. It was very liberating, I must say. And I did get to talk to a few of them, and luckily all of them welcomed me. I did also come out to my mom after my 21st birthday. That was a whole other thing. But like, she was very accepting of it, which was nice. And yeah, I came out when I was drunk, basically. So
always helps.
Yeah. But yeah, besides that, that was like the best memory in general. Looking forward to creating new ones too.
I think the memory that stands out most for me is the last Pride before the pandemic. I was with my sister and a bunch of her friends for the parade, and then met up with some of my friends as well. And I think my sister, I mean, I'm always joking with her about this, but her friend group just skews largely queer, which I love. I think she might actually be one of the few straight cis people in her entire friend group. But I think she's been the most supportive, incredible person, I mean, in my life, but specifically in my journey as an LGBTQ plus person. But that moment, I remember we were, you know, you have this scaffolding and it's sort of like these X bars going across that I guess you're not supposed to climb up, but no one really cares.
The most
no one
dangerous cares. Monkey bars.
Yeah, exactly. And I think no one cares most days. Certainly nobody cares on Pride. And I remember standing up on this bar, my sister next to me. Next to her was her best friend, Sam, who's a trans man. And like the three of us just shouting and cheering. I mean, my sister had on, I mean, not a ton of clothing, but what she did have was very like glitter and rainbow focus. And I think just the two of us having that day together, and we actually, when the parade ended, rounded a corner and ran into two of my mom's really good friends, a gay couple. And I think just being with her and then seeing these friends of my parents and like having that moment together with, you know, being around Austin, to your point, like meeting lots of new people, but also celebrating with the people close to home, people who's, you know, opinion and whose like value in your life you matter most. I think that was just like such a highlight. Can't be beat.
It's incredible. Thank you guys for sharing all those experiences. They're all amazing. And for those of us who are going to be in London this year, Pride is going to be on the 2nd of July, and it's 50 years of Pride in London this year. So it's a big anniversary. Turning the conversation slightly towards the school and Out in Business. So we're all a bit biased towards this. We're all on the exco of the Out in Business Club. Julia and I will be leading the club as co-presidents next year. So we obviously have a lot of buy-in and think it's a very important establishment here at London Business School. I just wanted to understand what motivated all of you to sort of get involved in Out in Business. Why do you think it's important? Austin, do you want to kick us off maybe?
Yeah, I think there's something that's really unique about London Business School is how many different student clubs there are for any of the types of interests. If you want to be in sailing or rock climbing or archery or whatever it is going to be, there's going to be an opportunity for you to do that. But what Out in Business offers is a safe place for both queer students and allies to connect together and try to promote our community's visibility. And as I look towards next year, what Out in Business is hoping to accomplish, I'm really excited about the community we've already built this year and the initiatives we're going to start taking to continue to advance our community, because there's something really special about being with queer people from all different walks of life, all different countries, all different backgrounds, and all different levels of visibility, and suddenly seeing the collective embrace of a new city where 92% of us have now relocated to, which is pretty special to explore a new city together and have that built-in community. So I think for me, community is the big reason why Out in Business has always drawn me into it.
Personally, when I came into LBS, I came from after my undergrad, and what happened in undergrad was I was a part of too many societies, had too many interests. It still prevails. But when I came here, I just looked at all the clubs and one particularly stood out to me. And, you know, the people there seemed extra, extra. And it was super exciting. And I attended many of their Zoom calls during, like, before getting admitted and, like, even before getting accepted. It was a huge factor that made me apply to LBS in the first place. Hearing people talking about, like, the community, hearing them talk about the staff, hearing them talk about the different facilities the school offers, etc., and the inclusivity in general, and also about UROUT. So all of these things combined made me apply here, and I was just like, I want to advocate for something that really means something to me, and this is going to be something that I'm going to focus on besides other stuff like recruitment and everything, and this is something that I felt like I could actually treasure and pursue. So that's the main reason why I applied and why I came into OIB, because I wanted to be a part of something that I could actually, you know, help and move forward with.
Yeah. And you mentioned UROUT quickly there. For those of people who might be listening who don't know what UROUT is, do you want to quickly summarize what that means to you?
Yeah, sure.
And what it is?
UROUT is one of Europe's leading LGBTQ and business conferences for students in business schools. We see tons of students coming in from all over Europe. We have people come flying in, and we have tons of speakers who are coming from different walks of life, different backgrounds, and in general they come from different industries. So you have a huge mix of people you can hear from. If you want any guidance with your career, any guidance with your own businesses, whatever it is, you can come over to UROUT to, you know, meet people, network, find new friends, have fun at dinner parties, etc.
Amazing. And Julia, what motivated you to join Out in Business other than being co-president with someone as amazing as me?
Oh, I mean, is there even a reason beyond that? You've said it all. No, I mean, that's super true. I think for me, so previously I worked in finance before pursuing my MBA. I was super involved in our LGBTQ plus network. I think that work where I started there is a big part of my drive with OIB. For me, being involved in the Out in Business Club, you know, queer spaces tend to be, just for, like, full disclosure, is where I tend to sort of feel most at home and feel most comfortable. That's not to say that I don't have a ton of friends and family who are amazing allies who create that space for me and are, you know, as thoughtful and as inclusive as possible. But just for me and my own journey and, you know, how I present to the world and small things like just being able to, you know, cut my hair to the length that I want or wear the clothes that I want, like queer spaces and feeling that welcoming sense of not just accepting you for who you are, but celebrating and like being proud of the person that you are, I think is something that I crave on a daily basis. It hasn't always been easy. You know, I think coming out was definitely a struggle. I was bullied when I was younger. And I think getting to where I am now, I feel so fortunate and so grateful to be here and to have these opportunities and to have the platform and the resources and the power that we have with, you know, the Out in Business Club to really, you know, change hearts and minds, as much of a cliche as that might sound like. I think the work that we do and, you know, Samson, what you talked about with UROUT, it's moving and it's impactful. And I think that's what motivates me to be here is that I think there's so many things that we do phenomenally well, particularly with our international student body. I want to make sure that people who didn't come from a place where you could be out or maybe be as out as you wanted to feel like they've got that here. And I think being in the Out in Business Club, it just is exactly the kind of work that I want to be doing. And it feels so motivating to be a part of this community, on top of it just being such a fun group of people. Like, I just couldn't ask for a better group of people to do this work with. Cam, you're yourself very much included. So why, besides working with me, obviously, why are you doing OIB this year?
Oh, for me, I guess this has kind of been touched on already, but for me, it was all about creating safe spaces. I was very fortunate to come from a background where it wasn't super hard for me to come out. I was always in companies and in environments where people were generally quite liberal, quite inclusive, quite receptive. And I felt like I hadn't really done much work to create those safe spaces, but I'd always just been someone who'd benefited from them. And I'm a strong believer in, you know, creating those safe spaces allows you to be authentic and vulnerable. And that's when you actually get the best out of people. And so when I came to the London Business School, I thought, you know, I want to be part of that. You know, we've got, as Austin mentioned earlier, 92% of the people who come to LBS don't come from the UK. And a lot of them come from countries where it might not be okay to be LGBT publicly. And I just thought, you know, I really want to work hard to sort of like create those safe spaces and allow them to be vulnerable and allow them to achieve the best they possibly can, because I've been a beneficiary of those safe spaces myself, whether in the workplace or whether in academic settings. So for me, that's exactly why I got involved. And I'm so happy to be doing the work that we're doing. But I think one of the things that was kind of mentioned both by Austin and by you, Julia, as well, was the importance of allies and how allies play a role in the community and what they do. So maybe we can talk a little bit about why are allies important? What have they done within OIB and how do OIB engage with allies to help sort of encourage that better community or build that better community?
So I think one of the more impactful experiences that I had at LBS was LBS is a tradition where we have coming out week and we each have the opportunity to share our stories. And during coming out week, it's tradition that you usually have two allies who stand with you as a support there as you share it with your class. And even for somebody who did not have an incredibly difficult coming out story, I was similarly fortunate to have parents who were very accepting. It's incredibly exposing to stand up before a class of 90 people that you've really only known for a couple months, who you really respect and you want to respect you, and suddenly share such an intensely personal and vulnerable moment with them. And as I was preparing for this, I felt a lot more confident than I did when I stood up in front of the group. And suddenly I was looking before all the faces and I was looking at my notes and realizing I was going to talk about some really personal feelings. But having the two allies who stood beside me, who looked at the crowd with me and made me not feel alone as I was on stage saying that, provided me the support that allowed me to share my story. And as I shared my story, what was really impactful was that afterwards, a lot of these allies who were in the class came up to me and wanted to know more. And I had people who came up and said, you know, my cousin is gay. We've never talked about it as a family because it wouldn't be accepted in my country. What can I do to support them? I hadn't heard about this experience before. What is it like? How do you find living in the queer community, and what can we do to make it a safer community for you? And that willingness to learn and that exploration that LBS encourages really made a positive impact on me personally. And that, I would say, more than anything else, has been one of the most impactful experiences I've had since coming here.
Samson?
Yeah, I mean, my experience was also related to coming out week specifically. Even though I've had a history of amazing allies, some of my friends who've told me that they always knew I might be queer from the beginning, which is why they tried to make like a welcome space. But in general, during coming out week, we had to choose one ally to stand with us when we spoke. He actually took the effort to read up on a bunch of stuff, on a bunch of laws, and like on a bunch of stats, etc. Talk about how like there's a disparity between different countries and everything. And he actually gave a whole 2 to 3 minute rundown on how it works and what are the issues that still prevail. Even though we have all these things, the thing is not done. The community still needs to move on. And I really found that empowering, because before I went on, I was quite scared, because I've only known these people for like less than a month. And like, these are people I don't know how they're going to react to this, etc. After my speech, quite a few of them came up to me and said, hey, if you ever need support for anything, let us know. It was really brave of you. We really appreciate it. Some of them asked me for like my personal inputs with some things like that. And I really appreciated that, because when they come and like vocalize it to you, even though it's not something, you know, you'd expect everyone to do, when they come and vocalize it to you, it gives you a real concrete understanding that they are with you, which is like something that's really encouraging in general. But yeah, that was easily one of my most strongest experiences with allies.
Yeah. And I think one of the things you highlighted there is sort of the difference between active and passive mm-hmm. allyship there. And yeah. So it sounds like, you know, from your experience, you were someone who benefited massively from that active allyship. I know from my experience as well at LBS, there's been so many active allies just in the wider community. One of the first experiences I had at LBS was going to the Rainbow Party. I think most of you were there as well. And, you know, it's in Heaven, a big gay club in London. And I think 70 to 80% of the people who went did not identify as LGBTQ. And they were all there having an amazing time. They were painted in glitter. They were wearing rainbows and they were showing their support as well. And one of the other things I would suggest as an example here is, I don't know if anyone else knows about like the Rainbow Laces initiative that we have. So I play rugby here at London Business School, and I used to play rugby actually at my undergrad as well. The culture could not be more different. When I came here, one of the first things I saw was the entire rugby team wearing rainbow laces as an active sign that they stand with the LGBT community and they create that sort of safe, inclusive space. And I know that there's many members, I think maybe 10 to 15% of the rugby club identify as LGBTQ+. And they're open about it as well, which is something that's amazing. And I don't think I've seen in any other, I guess, like sporting team sort of like setting. Julia, do you have any other examples of active allyship maybe at LBS, or how OIB helps to encourage allyship?
Yeah, and I think the one thing, or a couple of things that I would comment on in what you shared, I think the rainbow laces is a great example, and the coming out stories. For me, when I think about allyship, it's tangible steps that you can commit to doing each day. I think a lot of people think of allyship as sort of big grand gestures, which, not to dissuade anyone from, you know, participating in those, but those get really hard to sustain. You can't necessarily throw together a massive event every single day. I love that we have, you know, Pride Month this month, but we also, as LGBTQ plus people, for us, Pride Month is 12 months a year, but I recognize that we're not going to have like Pride weekend every weekend. And so I think for me, allyship is like, what are the things that people really feel like they can commit to doing each day or each week, a small sustainable action? Because I think that sort of, you know, creates the most change and the way that we really see progress move forward. For me, one of the things that really stood out was I had been invited to speak at a Cambridge event earlier this year. They were launching a pronouns initiative in their business cards. The Raghav, who I think a lot of us met at Year Out last year, had invited me to come. I had moderated a panel during Year Out on pronouns and their importance. And he'd invited me to speak in February at this Cambridge event via Zoom for the launch of their pronouns initiative in business cards. And it wasn't a ton of folks who joined, but I got 3 questions at the end, one from an individual and a bunch of questions from a couple. And the thoughtfulness of these questions, the way that they were asking, how could they, you know, embrace pronouns in their workplace? What are the books and the movies and the documentaries that they should be researching to learn more about this? Just the level of engagement, Austin, to your point, the willingness to learn, the effort that they brought into this conversation was incredible. And I want people to learn, but I also want allies to take some of the work on themselves and like continue that journey learning outside of just the conversations we have, and just the thoughtfulness of easily 30 minutes of just really brilliant, wonderful questions was something that really stood out for me. And it was 2 people who I didn't know at all, who I hadn't met at Year Out, who were allies to Cambridge's LGBTQ plus club. Like, we were so removed from each other from a personal context, and that just willingness to show up at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday and be really authentic is something I really appreciate, and makes me think about like allyship at LBS. I think out in business, one of the things that I love is that our exco is open to everyone. I think we have positions, you know, we have an allies and inclusion pillar. And so a lot of the work is led by queer people, but it's not only on us. Like, we have allies involved in our exco. And I really like that model of leaning into them. And I think it's really embedded in the LBS community that allyship is about showing up for each other. I think there are ways that we could look at examples before us, like adding pronouns into our email signatures or our nameplates for classes, things like that, to demonstrate that visible allyship is, I think, Cam, you know, we've talked about pushing the school in that direction moving forward, because I think those steps can seem small, but they have a profound impact. And I think LBS is really good at sort of pushing that needle of progress, you know, into that right direction.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think everything you said there is very, very important. And I think it's also very important to just clarify, you know, if allies do want to ask questions, it's okay to ask questions about what your experience has been like. In fact, you know, from everyone I've met, it's almost encouraged. Just keeping on the topic you were kind of touching on there, Julia, which was about LBS and its commitment to, I guess, the LGBT community here at the school. What have your experiences been like of working with the school? You know, what are they actively working on? How is OIB and other sort of LGBT networks within the community?
Yeah, I think first off, huge shout out to Hannah Millard. So she's our Associate Director of Diversity, Inclusion and Belonging, DIB, at the school. She deserves a massive call out, because a lot of the work that we want to do, I think, not just within OIB, but within the broader school, and like pushing the school on the initiatives that we think are most impactful. I think she is not only incredibly thoughtful and a super active listener, but she's willing to pick up that torch with us and carry it forward and do the work. And I think her level of engagement has been instrumental. One of the things that I was really happy to see the school put out earlier this year was our trans equality policy. So that came out, I want to say, earlier 2022, maybe around January. And that's really transformational. I think as an LGBTQ plus community, I would say, perhaps critically, that I think we do really well with creating spaces for gay men. I would maybe caveat that we do really well creating spaces for like cisgender gay white men. I think we do an okay job creating spaces for queer women. And I think outside of that, there's a lot of work to do. I think the bisexual community, folks who identify as transgender, folks who identify as non-binary and genderqueer, I don't share those identities. And so I don't want to comment on an experience or an identity that I don't hold. But from what I've seen and from what has been shared with me, I don't know that we're doing everything we can to make all spaces feel as inclusive and equitable as possible for everyone. And so I think having a policy at the school that highlights the transgender community, that provides resources, people need tools and resources to be set up for success so that everyone has the best chance to do whatever it is that they came here to do. Whatever your journey is as an early career, as a MIM, as an MBA, whatever you're here to do, I think Out in Business wants you to thrive in that, not just achieve your goals, but thrive in your personal life, your professional life, your student life, and everything. And I think policies like the trans equality policy push us in that direction to be better and be more inclusive and be more thoughtful about who we bring to the table and whose identities we amplify. I think where we could push more is things like having pronouns be an embedded part of our culture and our institution. I think, you know, there are a lot of days in our community that go outside of Pride Month. So we have, you know, Bisexual Awareness Day, we have International Transgender Day of Visibility, which is in March, and Transgender Day of Remembrance in November. And I think amplifying all the voices in our community is something that we as a community, I don't think, are doing as well. And so naturally within OIB, that's a journey for us to go on. And I think that's something where we could, you know, push a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think Julia is very humble, so she won't brag about this herself. But, you know, Julia was absolutely fundamental in getting the trans equality policy over the line. It's completely transformational. It's unbelievable that the school has been able to roll this out. And, you know, one of the things Julia and I are working with as well is, you know, we're working with the school on a wider LGBTQ plus strategy. And we're dealing with a lot of the bureaucracy, which is just, you know, a part of the parcel, I guess, with like all academic institutions. You just have to deal with it.
Totally.
One of the things that we've noticed, though, is that with every conversation we've had, we've never had to convince anyone at the school for buy-in. You know, when we speak to the chief people officer, when we speak to sort of senior people at school, speak to faculty, everyone understands why this is important. Everyone is bought into the ideas that we're putting across there. It just so happens to be the case that it's quite difficult to sort of get the governance ticks here and there. Austin, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, and on that point, I think one of the things that really struck me about LBS is how much of it is a student-led community. And the general approach to any initiative is go ahead and try it. Try to make this work. And I think that really differed from my experience in undergraduate, where there's generally a structure, there's generally programs involved, and you're sort of guided into these pathways that have been established for you. LBS really is a student-led community, and you are expected to contribute to that community as a student here, even from your first day there. And to the point about what Out in Business is doing and all the initiatives we're working on with the school, that is because those are priorities for Out in Business, and that is because leaders like Cameron and Julia here are continuing to advance this progress. And to the extent that new students come into the school, from day one, you can start making a positive impact in the community, because everything from one of Europe's largest LGBT business conferences to any of the other events that are happening are all entirely student-led and mostly student-run. And that is a really unique opportunity at LBS to make an impact.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as a non-binary person, adding on to what Julia mentioned about the pronouns, a lot of what like hovers around some people having a difficulty in understanding the importance of pronouns, even though obviously pronouns aren't gender. But there's a general confusion around that because it was never highlighted as something that was part of them or that was actually impacting their identity or their idea of themselves in general, right? And yeah, I do believe that some measures like that do play a huge role in normalizing it, helping people understand, getting those narratives out there, getting questions being asked, because we're always willing to answer questions. And yeah, there are people who always ask questions, and like obviously we're always open to them. But yeah, it is something that's super important. And it's also partially why, you know, so many non-binary people might find it a little hard sometimes. But this is an important step in general. I believe that, you know, it's a step for the better.
For sure. One of the things we've been discussing is how it's an incredible atmosphere to be here at LBS at this time, because so many of these amazing initiatives are being pushed forward by student-run clubs. And OIB, obviously, is something very passionate to us, but we're fortunate at LBS to have some other diversity clubs on campus. So we have Black in Business, the BIB, we have Women in Business, and we also have FLY, which I believe is First Generation Intermediate or...
First Generation Christian and Low and Intermediate Income Club.
Yeah, exactly. And so we have all these diversity clubs on campus. We have all these student-run communities pushing these agendas. I wonder, what have your experiences been like working with these other clubs? And I guess, kind of to add on to that, one of the theme of Europe last year was intersectionality. And intersectionality is pretty much, you know, the idea that everyone has their own unique experiences of discrimination and oppression. And actually, you know, whether that's gender, whether that's sex, whether that's race, things like that, we all kind of have to work together, I guess, to help.
One of my experiences learning about intersectionality here was when I was first working with my study group. And study groups at LBS are a group of 5 to 6 students that you're going to do most of your courses with, at least in the MBA program for your initial semester. And they try to make them as diverse and representative as they can of the student body. So my study group was a man from China, a man from India, a woman from Nigeria, and a woman from Eritrea. And as I was talking to the 2 Black women in my study group, and they immediately started asking about what the bisexual experience was, what that meant to me, what I had experienced in work, how did I find coming out at work, and was that something that I had found impacted my career? And as we were discussing our experiences, we realized that there was a lot of common overlap with the things that we were concerned about, the lack of representation that we had seen in our various industries, the questions that we had to raise about how much should we try to adapt ourselves to the culture versus maintain an independent identity and try to highlight our differences within that and balancing that. And as we were discussing both of our experiences, we realized we had a lot more in common than we had previously had. And to the extent that we have these types of opportunities to connect with the various clubs, I think that is what really helps advance the community's progress, because we realize how much we have in similar and how the lessons learned from one community can actually be applied to the advancement of another community. And that, for me, was one of the key drivers of the importance of the intersectionality.
Personally, for me, it started off when I came to class and I saw many people talking about different things. My best experience would be with this isn't me participating with the club, but I've heard a lot about what the Women in Business Club does, because one of my friends is part of it. She's been talking about how there's an advocacy group, about how they try to, you know, bring these important discussions into play. And what I love about it is the fact that the different diversity clubs actually collaborate with each other, getting, you know, the whole intersectionality idea out there, because that's when you understand how it plays out. Another experience would be my study groups, obviously, because you see people from different backgrounds. Some people like me who don't, when people ask me, you know, where are you from? I just go, I don't know. I was born and raised in one country. I'm a different nationality, right? And the same applies to many other people. So in general, you see people from different global backgrounds, people who've had different experiences, people who've come from like South Africa and have seen different things, people who come from other countries and seen different things. It's like always a different experience. And they contrast it to what they see in London. And it's always like a growing experience in general to interact with these people. And I encourage everyone to do that, because that's where you like expand your perspectives, which is something that's important in life in general.
Yeah, I would just say to add to that, there was an amazing event that happened a few months ago, which was actually run by Women in Business, but in which a lot of OIB Exco members were participating. It was called The Great Debate. It was a debate fundamentally around a couple of issues. So one of the issues was gender quotas. One of the issues was, do we fire or do we suspend employees who've been accused of sexual harassment? And over the course of the night, the discourse of the event was like, it allowed people to be very vulnerable. It allowed people to open up and share personal experiences. And you know what? It was one of those things where it was like you were getting perspectives from all these women who had, you know, been in positions which were horrible, absolutely horrible. And you could hear firsthand from the perspectives. And actually, there was people from the business club there sharing their experiences as well. And it was amazing how someone would be vulnerable and then it would induce someone else to open up and share and be vulnerable as well. And I think it's one of those things where it's like you collectively are creating that safe space where you're able to sort of like share these experiences and, you know, talk about why they're important to have things like gender quotas, things like that. And I think for me, it was really inspirational because there's so many issues within our community and the LGBTQ plus community where we could have a debate like that. And I love that we are on a campus with people who are willing to be open-minded, who are willing to go into an event like that and willing to have their minds changed. I think that's something which is kind of rare to find. And working with the other diversity clubs is crucial to that because we are facing the same sort of oppression in certain issues.
I think we're stronger together, ultimately. Yeah. And I think, so earlier this year, I mentioned the trans equality policy rolled out. We also, as a school, we rolled out a bullying and harassment policy along with a safe reporting tool. And the four diversity clubs, so Women in Business, Out in Business, Black in Business, and First Generation and Low and Intermediate Income Club, the four diversity clubs came together and hosted what we called Speak Out Week. And that, I think, was, so it was the first of its kind event. It was different events, different types of events that ran for a week. Out in Business, we hosted the Promising Young Woman event that week, which, if you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful film. It highlights the effects of sexual harassment on survivors, as well as, you know, people in the survivors' community, their family, their friends, etc. It also is really thought-provoking and powerful in terms of how are we framing the conversation around sexual harassment. What does it look like? What do we need to be doing more of? And so on. But I think that week and having different events that week, and ultimately our success as a school in getting, you know, the bullying and harassment policy and the safe reporting tool out there, which I think are necessary and critical and really move the school to a, you know, just safer and more inclusive place. But I think that work, by and large, happened because these four clubs came together. And so I was fortunate enough that I got to sit in on some of the meetings as a representative of OIB. But the leadership that came from, you know, the senior exco of the presidents then of the four different clubs was phenomenal. And I think for me, intersectionality, I think about that sense of just being stronger together. You know, when I think about women's issues or, you know, issues through a lens of feminism, if we're not thinking about the queer community, then folks like myself, you know, would be left out of that conversation. And when we think about, conversely, LGBTQ plus rights and who we're advocating for, I think predominantly we've amplified and highlighted historically voices of a lot of white people, you know, which as myself, as a white person, I try to be mindful of who are the voices that we're maybe leaving out of the conversation, and why recognizing and remembering stories like Marsha P. Johnson, like Sylvia Rivera, you know, trans women of color, it's so important that we don't forget their names, and also don't forget the stories and the work they did. And I think that intersectionality, we're stronger together, but we also, it's hard, and I would say almost impossible, to make progress for certain communities if we're leaving other communities behind. And for us, you know, people who are intersectional and holding multiple identities, which is realistically kind of most of us in the world, you know, as it relates to different systems of oppression and sort of power and privilege dynamics, I think that work is on all of us, you know, members of marginalized communities and allies, but it really is on everyone to kind of do that work. And so I think for me as a queer woman, that intersectionality lens feels really important in leading the work for those communities. But I'm also, you know, white and not disabled, and I have power and privilege in those contexts and want to use that to kind of open up more resources and platforms for other. And I think the school having these four diversity clubs is a phenomenal platform and also like a turning point for us to do a lot more, but do it all together.
Yeah. So let's move on. Let's talk about the importance of LGBTQ plus visibility through the lens of coming from a place where it's still a crime and a taboo. And I know we touched on this earlier, Samson, but I guess just for people who may be in a similar position, what is the importance of LGBTQ plus visibility for students who come from these places? What are some of the nuances of organizing in an international space like this? How important is it to have this community here in London, etc.?
Okay, so the thing is, if you live in a country that's like criminalized it, there isn't much you can do about it, especially if, you know, the punishments are something like, you know, getting imprisoned or getting fined or much worse things besides that, right? When they come to places like London, like the UK or the US or other countries where it's completely fine and, you know, you have a budding community there to support them, it is overwhelming initially. They will be super excited and super happy, but also some of them might not be as open as I was initially, because this might still be a touchy subject for them. And you can't expect them to be like that, obviously, because, you know, it hasn't been something they've addressed in a very long time. They've passed off for a very long time. It's become second nature to them by now. But some of the nuances would be in general, like, you know, to address these topics, because that's when they feel like they can come and talk about it. Not everyone will feel like, you know, okay, I need to do this now because I feel like, you know, I have been like, you know, suppressed or oppressed my entire life, and I feel like it's about time. Some of them just might be planning to go back there again. So what I would suggest is, in general, creating a safe space where, you know, even if they can't participate or talk about it, they can just hear about stories in general, just be an audience member, and in general be able to like listen to things and just know that they aren't alone, have like other people who are willing to talk about it come out. Another nuance would be like, in general, like, you know, they've not had the same experiences, but if they could find each other, they can actually relate on a lot of things, because it is hard to relate, even though, like, you know, it's nothing wrong in that, but like it is hard to relate sometimes with certain things. And in general, having, you know, normal things that every other queer person would prefer, like a strong ally base, strong friends who understand this, maybe people from that country also, because I've had people from similar countries coming up to me and saying, you know, and that's been very empowering for me personally. But also you see many countries implementing change recently. They have like trans equality laws coming up and stuff like that. So that's really empowering. Personally, I don't know if I'd ever go back even then, but even so, that's a different thing altogether. But in general, just create a space where they can hear about it. They don't necessarily have to participate vocally. Just as long as they know that there is someone else who's gone through the same experience as them, that's more than enough.
And to that point, Samson, I think one of the things that Out in Business does exceptionally well is we have over 900 student members, and the majority of them are allies. And that allyship, that strong ally base that we have, offers a degree of protection for the students who want to be involved but may not want to publicly identify yet, because they could always be one of the hundreds and hundreds of ally members that we have there. I remember when we first introduced ourselves with fun facts when you first meet the stream, and I introduced myself by saying, I love musicals. Pretty good dog whistle, and I had a lot of people come up to me afterwards. And some of the people who were less willing to be open just said, look, I'm not sure if I'm comfortable being in Out in Business yet, but would it be all right if I get invited to events? Can you just text me when things are happening? And I said, of course, I'm happy to. And we started a separate text chain, and I'd send them invites to all the stuff, and they'd come. And these people actually ultimately joined Out in Business because they wanted to be a bigger member of the community, and they wanted to join that. They realized that it didn't need to identify them back home. But I think that's one of the things that our allies offer as a protection, is the fact that you can live a lot more openly in London, and it doesn't necessarily have to relate to your identity back home. And there's a lot of students here who live very open lives with their identities in London while still maintaining their privacy back home. And we understand that and respect that.
I think actually that last point, Austin, is something that I wanted to touch on, or at least, you know, Samson asked you about, is because I think, you know, growing up in the U.S. and specifically in New York, you know, barring the difficulties of coming out and being bullied as a child, I was pretty fortunate in that once I was out, I could live out. There wasn't an element of sort of safety or taboo, barring the absurdity that's going on in the U.S. right now. Like, that was not sort of a focus point on my mind. And I think that's a privilege in that coming from a country where it is okay or it's accepted, or even better, like you have rights and certain, you know, legal rights like gay marriage, you know, being able to transition and so on in the U.S. And I know we have, you know, similar laws here in the U.K. But I think that privilege of sort of being out in the U.S. and the U.K., at least I've found we talk a lot about being out, whereas I think from an international perspective, and I don't know, Sam, I'm curious for your thoughts here, but maybe it's more sort of, how do we make spaces for sort of degrees of outness, if that makes sense, in that people, you know, Austin, to your point, might want to be out here and be involved in a community, but we also need to make space for people to live however they want back home or with their family. And I think LBS being so international sort of sparks that conversation in ways that, you know, if you're just in the UK or just in the US or another country like that, like you might not be having those kinds of conversations. So I was curious if you know, had anything to kind of share on that.
So, I mean, something that we need to remember initially is that when you do get bullied and everything, and you are queer and people do, you know, pick at things, small things like you're into arts and crafts, for example, or that, I mean, there are so many things they could pick on.
Are you a good crafter?
I am.
Okay, wow.
Thanks for asking.
Maybe they were just jealous of your talents.
But basically, with things like that, we can't exactly speak out because it is a crime. It's not a question of what will people think. It's more of a question of what will happen to me.
Right.
So what's important is there are ways you can have degrees to this. How I used to find relief is through pop culture and media, reading stories about people like Alan Turing, who are successful people. Also, like some people say you might have been neurodivergent as well. All of these things are really inspiring stories. But in the ways that we could do it personally would be exactly what we're doing right now and what we are planning to do, with having UROT being published online as well, having a few speaker sessions there, maybe collecting like an anonymous questionnaire where we can, like, you know, go through them and see what applies and maybe have a few questions answered for people who want to ask like these questions. There are always avenues for that. And I think that those are the ways we can allow people to be out through degrees. They don't have to be out at all if they don't want to, because that is their own journey. And it's only when they're comfortable that's the right decision. But they can always participate in these narratives and in general, you know, contribute there from what they know. Maybe talk to someone who, you know, has a few questions about like what they know, stuff like that. And in general, like, even though it is illegal in many countries, some people still do ask questions pertaining to these things, like, what do you think of this or stuff like that. As long as, you know, your identity is not, and this is very scary because it could lead to your identity being questioned in general. But like, there are some questions that are like a general thing. Like, people used to ask me, why do you paint your nails? I was like, because nail polish was created for human beings. Why do you paint your nails? Like, what utility does it serve you? Nothing. It's just an aesthetic thing. But yeah, stuff like that. I personally found relief in my unpassing off during the Pride Month in general. And I think those are like small degrees where people can enjoy it without really being questioned. Because if someone asks you, why do you like arts and crafts? Just say, you like arts and crafts. That's it.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think, yeah, I think everything you share is like is super important. And it's something that as leaders of the club next year, we need to be very mindful of. And I think coming back to some of the nuances about it, you know, it's, we want to engage people who identify within our community in any way that they feel comfortable with. Some things we're thinking about are, for example, you know, if there's an LGBTQ plus forum that we're reaching out to new admits with, perhaps it isn't the case that anyone who identifies as part of our community is going to likely join up to that because it might out them to some people who might, you know, otherwise not know. So we need to be very careful about how we communicate with potential admits and things like that. I'm going to ask everyone, what are we most looking forward to in this coming year, the year 2022/2023? Now, unfortunately, Samson is leaving us this year. He's graduating in the summer as an early career student, but he will be very much part of our alumni community, I hope. So, and as part of the community, I'm sure you'll be, you know, included in all the events that we have going forward. So what are you most looking forward to?
So basically, in the coming year, so last year was a pivotal year for me because I'm an early career student about to start work here in London. I'm looking forward to, you know, working while being out and like seeing what that's like. But also I feel like LBS has equipped me with a lot of like confidence in that. But in terms of the event I'm looking forward to the most, it's none other than Eurout this year, which is being organized by a team of the most amazing people ever. But I can't wait for it. I'm hoping to bring a few of my friends here. They are planning to visit because they know how passionate I'm about it. And yeah, that's mainly what I'm looking forward to. Looking forward to hear the speeches and everything lined up. And also, you know, the rest of Pride Month, which is my first Pride Month in general. But yeah.
Woohoo.
What I'm going to choose is something which we recently did, actually, and which I hope to make an annual initiative, is we recently had a retreat in Brighton with the LGBT clubs of Oxford and Cambridge Business Schools. That was an amazing weekend. We got to connect with some amazing people from the other schools, work together on different initiatives that we're going to sort of plan over the rest of the year. But making that retreat an annual event is something that I'm very passionate about and would look forward to.
For me, I really, really want us to establish pronouns on, you know, name tags, on name placards for classes, you know, putting them in email templates, you know, having them on student IDs and staff and faculty IDs. That's, you know, my goal. And I think something that we folded into, you know, CAM, our goals for 2022 and 2023. When I was at Goldman, I was fortunate enough to co-lead and found our pronouns initiative there. And it's maybe a cliche, but it's not untrue to say that it was the most transformational work I ever did, and it's what I'm most proud of. I got to meet now a very close friend and mentor of mine, Maeve Diwali, through that work. She spoke at Eurout last year, and she went through a very public transition. You can read, there's a phenomenal New York Times article profiling her if you want to look it up. But we met through that work, and knowing that she, you know, is there and not just living her best life, but living her truth and living in the way that works for her and sharing her identity with the world. And the fact that we were able to, you know, connect through that initiative was transformational for me. And I think seeing the impact that we can have and knowing amazing, courageous people like her, you know, makes me want to continue that here and meet the same kinds of outstanding people like I got to meet through that.
Okay, so finally, we're just going to move on to, for those potential admits, for those people who are thinking of applying to LBS, for those people who are deciding between business skills at the moment, is there anything you'd wished you'd known before coming to LBS? And this doesn't necessarily have to be YB related or Pride related.
Yeah, I think one thing that was a real consideration for me coming from New York, I got married last year to my wonderful husband. Yeah, it was, and we moved 1 month after the wedding, which is a whirlwind to say the least. But that's a huge decision, you know? My husband had to leave his job. He was moving to London. Neither of us had ever lived in London, and I hadn't been to London since 2008, and COVID didn't allow me to do school visits during the application process. And a real question I had was, my husband had lived in New York for over 10 years. He has a really ingrained community. He's an architect, and he has an incredibly involved job and licensing, and how does that work? And as we were looking towards moving over here, I didn't know what the process would look like to reestablish that community. How would it be making friends? What kind of resources would be available? What would be his visibility and his opportunity to interact with the LBS community? And I'm very happy to say that it exceeded all of my expectations. Within the LBS community, partners are incredibly involved. He has his own student ID. He has access to campus. He's gone on treks that I didn't go to. People sometimes ask me what it's like being as a partner because they think he is so visible. And he won best dressed in
incredible.
Our stream, even though he's not in our stream. But that kind of opportunity to have that visibility and that impact on the community, and that the friends that he's made in this community and how warmly they've welcomed him, those are things I wish I had known, because it would have made this decision so much easier. And I'm lucky I made this decision given what our experience has been. But I know it's a huge decision, especially moving to a new country, especially when it impacts your partner, because they're making this on a leap of faith with you. But LBS does a really great job of connecting you with the resources you need. And the student clubs especially welcome you with open arms. And so I know Out in Business, my husband's very excited to actually have a position with Out in Business next year, helping liaison with the partners club to make sure queer partners have the resources and the connections needed to make this transition over here. But that is something that is especially impactful for people who are making this decision for multiple people.
In general, something I'd wish they know is pertaining to two things. Firstly, it's recruitment, which was a major period slash phase for all of us. And since the early careers have only like a year, we have a lot to do, and it's going to be quite hectic. But I don't know, just like one word of encouragement is that, you know, just be sure that you put your best foot forward. It's going to be really challenging. Everyone is going to get like scared at one point. You're going to hear everyone talking about their different phases in the recruitment process. It's going to get super, you know, intimidating. But like in general, just remember that at the end of the day, as long as you show you did your best, there's nothing to worry about. Also, LBS has a well-being center that's always ready to talk to you about anything. They're always willing to listen. They're always willing to like help you through these things and just in general hear you out. Besides that, you also have your friends. You need to have some sort of support group, which for me personally, I was lucky enough to be joined by a friend of mine from undergrad. So I had her, and then I had like some other people from the course as well, from the program as well. But yeah, it's important to have your own support group, because at the end of the day, you guys will be there for each other in London. And another thing would be that as an early career student, the year is going to go by really, really fast. Like, you're not going to realize when you started, when you ended. You're going to feel like a totally different person at the end. Just be sure you enjoy every minute of it. Just be sure you do everything as you want to, as you're comfortable with. And yeah, in general, treat it as an experience that, you know, that you're here for.
So I just wanted to follow on again from Samson, from your point, that point about recruitment. For me, I wish I had known how it was going to look before I came to LBS. So when I came on the MBA program, I was convinced that I was going to graduate and start my own business, and it was going to be in the social impact space, and it was going to be based on social mobility. And then within a month or 2 months, I got caught on the consulting track because all my friends were doing consulting, case prep. And, you know, long story short, I ended up getting a summer internship in the space. And for me, you know, it was about like, when I applied, I just had such a narrow-minded vision of what I wanted to do and the impact I wanted to have and the way that I was going to achieve it. And I think one of the amazing things about the diversity at LBS is that it exposes you to people who have had so many amazing experiences in a diverse range of careers and industries and countries. And actually, it shows you that there are so many different ways to have the impact you want, so many different pathways to have the impact you want. And so actually, I don't see myself going into consulting as selling out yet, but I really, you know, valued the experience of being able to speak to people who'd been there before and sort of realize that actually I can do the kind of work that I want to do within that space. And one of the things I wanted to really reiterate around that, the whole process was painful. It was tough. You know, you've got essentially 2 or 3 months where your entire life is case prep, is CV review, is prepping for interviews. And then for some reason, all of the consulting firms threw all of the interviews in the same week. So you've got 1 week where you've got back to back to back to back interviews and you've got to be on top of it. But the thing that gets you through it is actually the community. I case prepped with maybe 20, 25 different people at LBS that I sourced through Out in Business, that I sourced through Social Impact, that I sourced through Rugby Club, through people in my stream, my study group, WhatsApp chats that just spontaneously are generated with people who are going into, you know, the MBB consulting. And I think had I not had those resources, I would never have gotten through it. In addition to that, the Career Centre is also really, really good for specifically for the more traditional MBA careers, so investment banking and consulting. I remember going through many iterations of, you know, case prep with people from the school, CV reviews with people from the school, etc. So that level of support is something I didn't realize coming into LBS, but it's something that I really took advantage of, and which I think is a really big selling point of the school, which I don't think we do a good enough job of like getting out there. And I think second point for me is don't stress about the GMAT. I think the GMAT was the one thing that, you know, I was stressing about the entire application process for LBS. And I think it was one of the things that, you know, you like, you read all those forums and you think, God, if I don't get a 730, there's no chance. Actually, it's important that you get a decent enough score to sort of be, you know, on the table. the thing that they care most about is actually more about your authentic experiences and the diversity of experiences and perspectives that you bring in and the passion and ambition for what you want to do post MBA or early careers. And I think that's one of the things that I think you need to really focus on is be authentic. And I think luckily I was able to do that in my application, but I didn't quite realize how much it was valued at LBS until I actually joined the program and saw the diversity in the classroom.
Yeah, so a couple of things that I would add. I would 100% plus one to your point about don't stress about the GMAT. So I didn't take the GMAT. I took the GRE. It worked better for where my skills are as far as like having a really strong memory and being, you know, strong on vocabulary and writing and all of that and just not being as quantitative, you know, strong in that sense. And I think that's difficult to put yourself in the mindset of when you're applying to business school. And it's not that I felt that, you know, there was a better program for me, but maybe I didn't think that I could cut it. I knew that I wanted to get an MBA and I knew I wanted to get an MBA at LBS, but the GMAT just didn't work for me. And I think it's one of those things where you have to pick what's right for you. And I think 100% Cam wouldn't stress about that. I took the GRE and it was totally fine, obviously, because I'm here. I think the two things that I would sort of share maybe that I wish I'd known is a little bit, Cam, similar to you. I think I'd come in with such a set vision and goal for what my year would look like and what my 2 years would look like. I think part of that is, you know, I'm pretty type A personality. I'm a big planner. Cam, you see the thousands of emails that you're on every day from me. So I think you know that. But, you know, the essays and part of the application process and, you know, Sam's, I'm curious if it's similar for early careers. I think it is, but they're prompting you to think about, like, why are you applying to this program? Why are you applying to this school? What do you hope to get out of it? And so it kind of forces you to create this plan, which absolutely makes sense. I think having a plan is good. Go in with the plan. You need it for the application anyways, and it's good to get your mind thinking. What's not good and what's maybe where I fell down and what I would do differently if I knew or sort of had this advice going in is that the plan can change. Mm-hmm. And if it does change, that's okay. It might even be better than your original plan. What's important is that you're thinking critically about, like, what are your goals post MBA? The specific company, the industry, where you end up, location, geography, all of that is sort of up in the air. But your goals and what you want out of your program, I think, is most important. And so for me, I had thought I would be in London this summer. I thought I'd be in an HR internship. My post-MBA goal is to be in diversity, equity, and inclusion work. Neither of those things are happening, but I'm getting out of it what I want, which is I'll actually be back in New York this summer. I'll be interning in the DEI space at the American Civil Liberties Union. And it's nonprofit, so it's different from, you know, going the corporate route, but it still lends to the goals that I have long-term of wanting to be in the DEI space. And I know I want to be in New York long-term for raising a family and I have family there. And I think keeping yourself honest about where you want to be, but also being flexible and being adaptable and being open to change is really important. And I think that's something that I really wish I'd known coming in and spending less time on trying to stick with the original plan and more time on, let's try this part of the plan, but if that doesn't work, here are some backups, here are some options, and being really open to that. I think the other thing too that you kind of, Samson and Cam, both touched on with recruiting, something that I would just offer is it just is stressful. There's just kind of no way around that. But Cam, to your point about having community is really important, I think it's just helpful to be in a mindset of framing what the next couple of months look like, right? I think what gets really difficult is suddenly being in a hard situation and not being mentally prepared. I think had I known just that it would be stressful to recruit for internships and likely will be stressful to re-recruit for full-time and just being mentally in that space so I could lean on people more, reach out more, have established support systems is something I would maybe do differently versus thinking, oh, I'm sure I can manage this. It probably won't be stressful if I do all this work or if I did all this prep and these pre-conversations and these coffee chats, then it won't be stressful. Like, that's just not life. It's not reality. It is stressful when you move from, which, you know, everyone who's a prospective student, when you move from being employed to being unemployed and then recruiting for employment, it's a difficult process. Like, that's just, you know, the nature of the beast. But you absolutely come out the other side. You will be successful. You will find whatever it is that you're looking for. It just takes time and you need to lean on the people around you for that. But I think a takeaway for me was it's totally okay to be stressed and find a way through it. And I think having a better mindset about that could have been, you know, helpful for me.
So before we wrap up, is there anything anyone else wants to add or wants to share?
Yeah, I just want to shout out Aaron and Rumi. They were our phenomenal OIB co-presidents this past year. Their vision, their leadership with Year Out, with Speak Out Week, with, you know, Aaron participated in Great Debate. They're rock stars through and through. And I just think all of us here, you know, Cam, Austin, Samson, and myself, and everyone else at OIB and just the broader LBS community wouldn't be where we are without them. So I just want to thank them and, you know, shout out how far we've gone, and super happy to be carrying the torch forward.
So I just wanted to thank Samson, Julia, and Austin for your time today. If anyone listening to this is interested in hearing more about what Out in Business is doing, please reach out to Austin, Julia, or myself. If you're a potential admit coming into LBS who wants to get involved, please reach out. And happy Pride Month, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.